WTF is Retail, presented by Knotted Commerce, the integration specialists for growing retail brands. Welcome back to WTF is Retail for another mid-season episode. We're kind of in between seasons, and we have a very special guest with us today, Dave Wiltshire. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Awesome. Glad to be aboard. So, you know, Dave, familiar face in the e-com scene, founder of Patchworks, Juno, and now UK market lead at Order Editing.
That's right.
How's it feel to be a jack of all trades?
Feels really good, actually. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for having us, eh? And also, we're joined by AD, the CEO of Knotted Commerce. AD.
Hello.
You ready for your first podcast?
Yeah.
One word answers.
Welcome, Rob. Here we go.
Awesome. So, obviously, I wanted to start off by getting a bit of backstory on you. You've got a lot of experience in the e-com space. Some would say maybe even pioneered it, helped shape the UK e-com tech space. Is that a bit too big?
Yeah, I think it's a bit big. Probably a little stretch.
Yeah, well, that's how I like to think of it. So, yeah, give us a bit of a backstory. You know, Juno was obviously before Patchworks. How did all this come about, or is there something before Juno?
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll give you a personal story, so it's a bit more interesting, from university to now. I'll touch on a few things that I think are really important to young founders that are starting out, and particularly creative ones that might be struggling with kind of running a business and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So when I left school, I did a fine art degree at Ravensbourne. So I started off doing sculpture, which was what I was into, and absolutely loved it. Was good with anything to do with 3D. But while I was at art college, I realized that actually a lot of the, about 50%, and if you've been to art college, you'll recognize this, but about 50% of the people that attend art college are out making lovely artwork and spending a lot of time creating wonderful things. And then the other 50% are usually setting fire to dolls, chucking them in the garden and taking a photo, and then come back and get the same results. Yeah, exactly. So I thought to myself at that time, you know, what do I want to do with my life? And I thought, I need to do something a bit more commercial, otherwise I'm probably going
to
end up dying in a crack den in Brighton. So I then thought, well, I need to do something with 3D. So I identified that Nottingham was good for product design. So I went to Nottingham and studied furniture and product design, which was a 3-year course with a gap year. And on my placement, I did it, and I think placement years are really important for students because you get that first touch of industry. I did a placement year working at an IT company called Little Fish, who are really big now, but at the time they were like 5 or 10 people based in Nottingham. And I did a year doing web design for them back in 2004. And then I graduated in 2006, and I'd partied quite a lot, I've got to be honest, through university. Had a wonderful time and came out, just scraped a 2-2. I went for a design job or a web design job at a local company, and they offered me 13 grand a year. And I was thinking, shouldn't I just go to London? I've got to rent a flat for 6 months in Nottingham and, you know, be stuck here. And they offered me no job security. So obviously I went to the pub and bumped into the CEO of Little Fish, who at the time was a guy called Adam Webb. And he'd bought a bigger office with a load of space. And I think he was a bit lonely. So he said, look, do you want to come and start a web company in my office? And he said a few things. He said, there's no money in the internet. And I thought, hang on a minute. There probably is. And he also said, I've got a load of clients that we're not going to service anymore. One of them's part of the NHS. You can have them if you want to get started. So I thought, well, yeah, why not? You know, running a business is probably easy. Had no commercial knowledge whatsoever. Had no idea what I was getting into. So I phoned up a guy that was a friend of friends who I knew was a developer. I thought, obviously, I can't do this on my own. I'm going to need a developer. So I contacted that friend and basically said, look, I've got an opportunity to start a web company. I'm going to call it Juno after the beach my granddad landed on in the war, which was really nice. Shall we get started? And he basically just said, yeah, why not? Came and got involved. So we got going in 2006. It was actually 3 days after I finished university. It started on the 6th of the 6th, 06, which was the devil's day. But then I also realised later that it was the date of the D-Day landings, the 6th of the 6th. So that was also a nice coincidence. There's a lot, like,
and that
quite
was
a lot
after you'd already picked the name. Like
that was all, yeah, it's yeah. quite fatey, mm-hmm. and lots of fatey things have happened yeah. along the way. So obviously we started, we could do the work. Back then, no one could do web design, like the whole industry was terrible. And no one knew what they were doing, so it was quite easy to access.
And was it e-com back then, or was this just...
This was just web, so it was mainly business sites. This was pre-CMS, so we were building our own page builders and content management systems and stuff like that. Obviously, not being commercial, we were just selling everything at 1,500 quid, because that's what we needed to earn to feed ourselves for the month and pay our rent or whatever. So we were just going out, and we did that for, I think, a year and a half. I was a workaholic at that point, so I was working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I can vouch that came to present day.
Yeah. And after about a year and a half, I think it was incredibly painful. And I think one of the things I would say when you start companies is that you need to be resilient. And my co-founder, I think, got an offer from another agency and sat me down one day and said, look, I'm taking the business from you. Offered me $4,000 and said, off you go, basically. I know you haven't got any money, and so I'm going to crack on, which was obviously upsetting. I thought at the time, what am I going to do? And I thought maybe with $4,000 I could go to Thailand and have a great time and then go to London and all that kind of stuff. But I got to thinking, actually, you know, this is incredibly painful, and I don't think I know enough about this world. And so going and learning about another country and another culture and another world, basically, I just thought, you know, why do I need to do that when I don't understand the one I'm in at the moment? So I wanted to keep the business, but I didn't have any money. And then 2 weeks later, I went on a game show with my best friend at the time, who I was living with, a guy called Neil, who's now in Australia.
We'll put this YouTube link in the comments.
It's on YouTube.
I've seen it, and it's a wonderful show.
So I was at basically the lowest point of my life at that point, just thinking, what a waste of time. And I went on a game show with my friend, and between us, we won 45K.
Really?
Yeah, so 22.5 grand each. And that obviously changed the complexion of what I could do. So I then decided to buy the business from my co-founder. I paid a little bit more than I'd been offered, as was the right thing to do. And then obviously I had 3 or 5 active projects and no developer, just myself, having done the designs and the projects in build. So I thought, who in the world can help me now? And at the time, this was before geographic search phrases, so it was quite remarkable, really. But I thought, the person that can help me now will come up top for the search phrase PHP Developer UK. Mm-hmm. That will be a person that is a freelancer search phrase. So the person that comes up top for that will be a good developer, and they will have domain authority. I was quite into search and SEO and things at that point in time. They'll have domain authority, and which means they'll be capable and validated by Google, so they'll have a business. So I searched for that and clicked on the first result, and it was a company called Rolled, and it was actually a guy called Jamie Huskisson, who's since gone on to be an amazingly talented guy and has gone on to build one of the best Magento houses in the UK. And I phoned him up and said, this has happened. You know, companies falling apart, went on a game show. Do you want to join our companies together, join forces and forge a brighter tomorrow? And he said, actually, I'm in a bit of bother. One of my projects has gone wrong. I don't know what I'm going to do, blah, blah, blah. And I thought at that point in time, I've just gone through a bit of a divorce. I mean, when you break up with a business partner, it is a bit like a divorce. Like, So I said, what would it take for you to come and join us? And he said, well, if you cover this and pay me X, I'll come and join you for a year or two, and we can crack on, basically. Mm. And he came over, and he was far more intelligent than kind of anyone I'd met before. And he brought with him WordPress and Magento, which at the time were the high growth softwares. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was just like, fine, we'll use whatever, but let's go. So we moved away from building our own CMSs and started implementing WordPress for merchants. Around that time, I'd got a bit of sales advice from my friend. So we started to understand actually how to sell to people. So when they turn up at the window, you don't just say the price and say yes. You go through the window, you ask them a load of questions, and you find out about their business and their kind of wider business problems. And then you match your services to the issues arising. So we'd started to be commercially better. And obviously working with software, which was incredibly popular. Now, at the time, I was quite into search engine optimization, and I wouldn't say I was doing anything black hat, but I was interested in content strategy. And I knew someone that could build links in a way which wouldn't ever be banned. And he managed to get me to the top, or to number two globally, for the search phrase web design, which was out of 2.6 billion competitive results. Yeah. So we were visible, and we were selling the right software. I think we were top. I think we were above Magento for the search phrase Magento for about 6 months.
And that's key, right? Isn't it? I mean, reach and visibility is just
absolutely. Yeah. So I would say one of the key things that I've always done is I've always been able to build a market and to find customers, which is one of the key attributes, really.
Have them find you.
But at that point, I hadn't quite realised how much work was involved in building a Magento site. So we were selling Magento sites for $5,000 or $10,000, which obviously, if you understand the Magento ecosystem, you have to build those sites for $100,000, otherwise you lose money. Mm. So we were basically still in pain. It was just hard work, basically. We were trying to find inexpensive resource to deliver the websites on time, and that was incredibly challenging. But in that time, I did manage to find a company we won the business for a company called Graham & Green, which are a really established UK furniture retailer. And we delivered their site very inexpensively. I think they were coming from out of a situation. So a cheap website was a good thing for them. And so we built them a really nice Magento site and got them to the top of the search engines for everything, adding some good content to the site and what have you. And their business blossomed. And through the success of that project, we then started getting more retailers coming to us saying, oh, you did the Graham & Green site. Mm-hmm. We also integrated. So that's when we first did our first integration. So we integrated Graham & Green with Dynamics NAV, as it was, 2009 R2. Which didn't have an API.
And how back, what year is this, Marcus?
I think that was probably 2011.
Was integration like a big thing then? Was it like a
no? Project? So I integrated Dynamics NAV for them. I did a Sage 200, which at the time was incredibly challenging because they didn't have an API at all. You had to work through a second middleware. The name escapes me of that. And we integrate with Cybertill as well, which is a well-known POS system. It kind of dawned on me at that point in time that there was no one doing integration as a service. So I also realized that people that were buying Microsoft Dynamics had also spent $100,000-$150,000 on a Microsoft Dynamics implementation. So in order to win larger merchants that could afford to pay me more for their websites, I built a strategy around Microsoft Dynamics, NetSuite, all of the warehouses, 3PLs, POS systems in the UK, US and Australia. So I built a marketing plan around that. And then immediately, because there was no one else in the market, my phone started ringing from Australia. I'm tempted to do it. Can you do an Australian accent? Yeah. People phoning me up basically saying, g'day, mate. Can you do Starline to Magento? And I was like, well, we've not done that one, but we've done Microsoft Dynamics, Cybertill, Sage 200. if you go away and Google it, there's no one else offering this service. So, you know, it's going to cost you X, again, still undercharging at this point. It'll take you a month. Back then, none of the APIs worked, so it always took a bit longer. Because there was no one else doing it, you got a bit of grace from the customer. So we then had an enormous influx of work. At the time, I had a developer that was under a lot of pressure. So he was building all of these integrations. And because he was under so much pressure to deliver, he then started to optimize and turn it into a cloud middleware, which ended up being the Patchworks platform.
And was all that inbound? Was all that direct merchants coming and finding
you? All inbound,
you?
All inbound.
But yeah. Was there inside there? Because the bit that resonates with me is I, at the same time you was doing that, I was feeling the same pain and running an agency and having the same thing. Every agency out there was scratching their head trying to work every single time, going through the pain of trying to integrate systems, and you'd worked out there's a service in there that you can kind of make reusable. So I'm just curious if a lot of that inbound was agencies like the one I was in, struggling and coming to you for help because they'd seen your service.
It was the retailer themselves. Yeah. So, I think at the time everyone was trying to build integrations, but unless you were incredibly resilient and had someone that knew how to do an integration, they would fail. So agencies would just sell them and fail. So there was a world of people failing to do integrations. And actually that was, you know, it's difficult to explain now where we were spoilt with API first softwares, how challenging it was at the time. Just pure pain. So it was like you'd have to knock down a door to get through it, and then you'd find another problem that was immovable. So you would just be consistently just knocking down doors. And at that point in time, I was really just a cheerleader to my development team, just saying, they'd be turning up saying, I can't do it. And I'd be saying, you can do it. I've seen you do it before. Just keep going. We've got time. So it was about the psychology of actually just delivering the impossible at the time.
And aside from that challenge, which was obviously a massive challenge, what other kind of early challenges did you experience which kind of you guys had to overcome?
I think one of the key things that I did was I always saw the challenges as opportunities. So a very good example was we picked up a lovely merchant called Sweet Squares. We can bleep out the names of this if not anyone's offended about mentions. But we they had an incredibly intelligent CTO I think might make potentially business owner, who came in. He needed a NetSuite integration to Magento. They were doing on-site meetups where they would sell, I don't know, 1,100 sets of nails in an hour or something like that, or in a day. And so he commissioned us to build it. We charged him about $4,000, I think, at the time, so far too little. And went away and spent months building this integration between NetSuite and Magento. Only to find out at the time, and again, NetSuite's APIs now are fantastic. Love NetSuite, brilliant product. But at the time, their SOAP API could only take in, I can't remember if it was 70 orders an hour or 70 orders a day. But basically, it couldn't accept enough data to service this customer, so we were just completely blocked. Anyway, that customer, I think, was so pivotal to our growth because as he was leaving, I think he said something along the lines of, you should have used the REST API, you fucking idiot. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to find out about that. So I then went away and I found a NetSuite engineer in the US that could build around the REST API for NetSuite, which was until recently was the absolute only way that you could deliver volume into NetSuite. So I then paid him to build what was at the time a REST bundle. So there was no REST API for NetSuite. You had to build a bundle or an API layer yourself to then accept the data at a high rate. In doing that, I didn't know this at the time, but we were then the only people that could deliver high volumes of transactions into NetSuite. So at that point, NetSuite, I think a couple of clever sales guys at NetSuite realized actually, if they wanted to sell to high volume retailers, they had to use us So again, it was like a horrible situation that then turned into a fortuitous situation. And at that point, they turned up with Gymshark, who obviously had just blown up Magento because they were doing too much volume. And they were looking at moving to Shopify and then integrating with NetSuite. And at the time, we were the only people that had any way of...
What year was this, just so people can ground just how big Gymshark were at that point?
So that, I think it might have been 2014, but I'm unclear on the dates.
Yeah.
But essentially, they then joined our roster. And on the back of that, obviously, they were, or still are, the showpiece D2C retailer of the decade / half century. And then because of that, obviously NetSuite then knew we could do it, and people were starting to say, well, how are Gymshark achieving this level of sales and not blowing up? Because it, at the time, the whole industry was unable to handle that volume of sales.
How Shopify, how new to the UK market was this? Were people already using Shopify at this point?
Or? So I think Gymshark were groundbreaking because they were just going to softwares and saying, this has happened to us. Our Black Friday sales are enormous, and in the last one that we were in, that we did, we went down for 3 days. So we need to know which softwares are able to take this volume of data. And I think NetSuite were, again, one of the few that with their REST API could actually handle that volume. So they were very good at selecting technology that they perhaps weren't big enough for at the time, but that were big enough to handle their long-term growth. So they were looking very strategically at platforms that would be big enough to handle where they were going, and probably paying more for software. They believed in themselves so much that they were choosing software. And again, at that point in time, I think probably until Gymshark, Shopify was viewed as a small business software. So I think Gymshark were responsible for the making of, or the acceleration of, the entire tech space through this combination of systems, which obviously being us, I think there was probably 3 or 5 of us at the time. It was like the sun shining through the darkness for the first time in an incredibly long time. And then on the back of that, we picked up an amazing merchant. So it was Huel, Lounge Underwear later, but it was all through that initial problem solving that we went through. And like I say, technology's moved on now. NetSuite's APIs are fantastic. Shopify is obviously now seen as the enterprise platform. People may argue that it's not, but genuinely it is. It's the system that you can rely on handling volume. And also the security side of it as well is also super important when you're dealing with that volume of data.
It takes those kind of Gymshark moments to break those glass ceilings to then allow this to kind of happen after the fact.
I think on the back of that collaboration between lots of different softwares, I think the market changed in terms, I think NetSuite then picked up all the merchants in the UK. We picked up a load of merchants. Shopify then obviously onboarded a load of people that were imitating that or wanted to, which it's like people were trying to replicate that that growth model.
Yeah.
And so it was an incredibly, I'm going to say fortunate situation, but actually it was created through agonizingly painful exploration of a difficult world. And I think a lot of businesses are probably going through that same experience where you're anxious, not sure if it's going to work or not. And you're just doing it because you believe and you've got the right people around you to kind of get through that maelstrom. So, and that's really how Patchworks came about.
Interesting. And obviously, you've got, as you just explained, you've got heaps of experience previously. Now, UK market lead at order editing.
That's right.
What drew you to order editing? How did that come about? And why did that seem exciting for you to join the project?
Okay, so to complete the story with Patchworks, I think in 2022, we took on investment from Gresham House. We've taken on in excess of 10 million for an equity stake in Patchworks. There comes a point as a small business entrepreneur where you have to recognize that actually the business is bigger than perhaps you can still be the CEO for. So we went out and hired one of the best CEOs in Europe, a guy called Jim Herbert, who is the archetypal CEO, knows how to run a business, and has taken the company and taken it forward at a rate that I could only have imagined. The Patchworks platform has become a full IPaaS. We've moved away from doing the project side of things. It's actually delivered entirely by agencies now. So agencies go out and use it as a tool to deliver integrations for their merchants. And that's scaling up really nicely. In January, I joined the board in Patchworks. So I've cut down my time involvement and I'm just a board member now. So obviously at that point in time, I took a couple of months out and rest and recuperation after the 18 years prior, which, as you can sense from the prior conversation, was a pretty rough one.
Is that how you got so good at golf in those 2 months?
I did start practicing that a little bit before then, I've got to be honest with you. And good at golf. I'm still a very bad golfer with aspirations. So I joined the board. And I think in December, I became aware of order editing through a friend of mine, a guy called Ollie Rhodes, who is tapped into the industry, knows everything about software, what's good and what's not. He introduced me to Hamish, who was 2 months into order editing at the time. So I picked up the phone to Hamish and said, tell me about your business. And I listened to their story and their product and what it does. And it just blew me away. For a long time, I've been looking for something to do. I'm interested in innovation and problem solving that benefits customers. I think that's true with Patchworks, and I think will always be true in the career choices that I make. So I bumped into Hamish. He told me about the problem that they solve, and I was thinking about the business ongoing and trying to help them from afar. When I joined the board at Patchworks, I took a couple of months off and got pretty bored. You can probably sense I've got quite an active mind. I need to be doing something. I need to be stacking things up and building. And I was looking for a technology that solved a customer problem that offered tremendous value to the customer to make it like a no-brainer. And something that was in the startup scale-up phase. And also was fun. So I want to be doing something that's fun, scaling up, that will give me access to talk to the best merchants in the country. After my time in R&R, I reached out to Hamish and said, look, are you looking for someone to help you land the company in the UK? I'm up for it. And he very kindly took me up on the offer. So for the last 2 weeks since I started working for them, we've been going out and signing up new partners, new customers. We've signed some of the biggest retailers in the UK, and we're going through the onboarding process now. We're just looking to scale that up here in the UK.
So could you just run us through, just in brief terms, about the order editing offer? Me knowing you, obviously working with you for many years, I understand that it echoes and resonates what you've just said. It's about the customer, and I understand that order editing is purely about solving customer problems. I think it's probably worth the listeners kind of getting a rough idea as to just the highlight reel of what order editing's platform is there to provide.
So I think the origin story for order editing was that Hamish was working for Mr. Beast, so a new type of retailer, obviously an influencer retailer selling products. And the way that they work is they create like thirst drops. So they'll go out and sell 30,000 products in an hour to be delivered in 4 months. And in that process, there are a lot of order edits. Obviously, people move house, for one. There's lots of mistakes made, human error. People move in with their girlfriends, so they need to change their addresses. So they would have an industrial scale of order edits happening post-purchase. And obviously, in the world of Shopify, if you are a large retailer, you know that actually the customer's got no way of self-serving that. So they can't go out and the customer can't make the edits themselves. They have to either phone up or raise the ticket. So Hamish identified that actually, whilst this was really important for Mr. Beast, actually there was a real world case for this product, and retailers selling fast fashion, clothing and apparel, furniture, anyone essentially using an e-com platform has this problem currently. Order editing is a Shopify app, so it works just with Shopify. And what it enables, and the way that it works, it authorizes the payment, authorizes the card, and then creates an order editing window, which can be half an hour, 3 days. You can set that within the app. On the thank you page in Shopify and on the confirmation email, it just has a little link in there that says edit your order. And that enables the customer to be able to log into Shopify, edit the order, so they can change their address, they can change the order, like the t-shirt size, the color of their sofa, whatever you like, inside an app, completely self-served, and also introduces them to upsells, cross-sells. So for a, and we're, again, some of the larger retailers in the UK we're talking to at the moment, they will get 400 order edits a week, which is 40 hours of work. And they'll have a CX team just delivering those changes, which are obviously on full salary, doing stuff that really the customer wants to do themselves. Like no one wants to pick up the phone or fill in a contact form or talk to someone to go and change the address on their order. So in principle, it just solves that problem. Now, understanding that every retailer in the UK, large or small, has that issue, you understand the opportunity for this business. The TAM, as they call it, is absolutely enormous. And what we're finding is that the return on investment for this app is outrageous. So for a large retailer, I won't name them, with 400 hours of, with 40 hours of order edits a week, that has a cost. So that might be several thousand pounds of cost for the labor, time and input, as well as the slightly worse customer experience. But also these retailers are getting back a significant amount of upsell revenue. So as part of my blended role for landing order editing in the UK, I'm producing the marketing banners for them, which you'll see on my LinkedIn. And I haven't seen a return on investment lower than 16 to 1, with the highest that I've seen being 35 to 1. So you give order editing £1 and order editing gives you 35 back.
I liked how tangible that was on one of Hamish's social posts recently, where it's a nice touch. You've got that cha-ching email that comes in when there's been an upsell with the within the email. And it, I can't remember exactly, you'll probably be able to correct me, but something like, I just like that idea of they paid us $6. They took, in that same period, they took $1,300 in upsells. Like, it's just then becomes a no-brainer on money in
versus money. No-brainer is the word that everyone that we show this product to says, whether that's an agency, they go, oh my God, this is a no-brainer. We'll give this to all of our clients, or whether it's the customer themselves. I've been working with order editing for 2 weeks, but for 2 weeks before that, I was going on calls with retailers from around the world that were coming on for their 4 week, how's it gone conversation. And they were coming in like emotional. And I've never seen that with a product where the retailer comes on emotional in a really positive way, saying thank you, which again is tremendously energizing. And for me, as I said before, I can only sell products that I believe in. And so when I talk to merchants, it probably sounds like I'm selling to them, but actually I'm just saying this is what I believe, and that's how it for me, that makes it very easy to sell. So my job really is now to get this app in front of retailers in the UK, and all they have to do is look at it and understand it, and then they buy, and it's as simple as that. But the story isn't just the large retailer with an industrial size problem. They've got 400 tickets a week. I've obviously introduced it to some of my counterparts, my friends and brands, more recently, and one of them, who works for a big outdoor clothing brand, was saying that, I mean, they service 15 brands in their group. The director of e-commerce, they've got a very small team, the director of e-commerce said to me, oh, Johnny was away this week, so I've had to log into Gorgeous, and since with this conversation I've had to go and deal with an enormous number of order editing tickets myself. So rather than having a CX person doing these order edits and the cost of that, you've actually got a director of e-commerce, or in a lot of businesses it will be the business owner themselves, context switching, doing these little 3-minute, 6-minute order edits when they could actually be focusing their time on much bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. And building, the best case scenario from that, even if they do it really super, super slick, instant response, it's still not a great experience for the customer. They still would have preferred to press their buttons themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, who, like, you do not want to, most people don't want to interact or speak to people in general unless it's their family or their best friends.
I also don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. We are all on a podcast. But yeah, so it really is just about giving the crux of it is giving the your customer a great experience. Yeah. But actually, commercially, it works tremendously well for you as well. So for me, it's I'm helping a couple of young lads. I really want to see them do well. They're amazing. You'll probably see them all over Instagram. They've got the world at their feet. They're signing up the best brands in the UK. I won't mention the brands that are coming on now, but you'll see them on LinkedIn in the next 6 weeks. Okay. It's outrageous, the penetration this app's getting. Yeah. And this is before everyone else, like the rest of the world, realises how good this app is. Yeah. It solves a genuine problem in e-commerce. And more than anything, it's a bit of fun. Like, I'm using all of my skill set from marketing, networking, this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Sculpting from back in the day.
I'm not doing sculpture. I'm still using my creative skills. Yeah. So I do.
I've
get
not
that.
Seen any socials where you've done what Hamish has done though. He's been biking around Australia, fly dropping.
I'm not going to be doing. That's very much a young man's game. But yeah, I mean, this is about as far as I'll go on that front, I think, to be honest with you. Mm. But
And what kind of role, or if any role, does AI play in the platform? For example, like recommendations for upsell, all that kind of stuff. Does it play any role?
So there is AI in the product, and it's around recommending address changes at the moment. But obviously, the product is becoming more intelligent. It obviously uses the intelligence within Shopify for recommendations. But over the next few weeks, you'll see some more features coming out. I think the release today is around presenting products that the customer has viewed previously. So tremendously relevant upsells coming into the application. Obviously, once you've got a customer to buy a product, if they then log in and take an upsell post-purchase, actually the value of that upsell is tremendous because you've already deployed your ad spend, you've already got the merchant to the product to buy it. So any sale that your additional sale that you make to that merchant is worth a lot more than perhaps the first transaction because you don't have all of that spend to get them there. So so inside that process, you can then offer the customer a nice discount to get them to buy another item, which is again a tremendous part of the value of proposition of the product.
I can imagine it takes away some of that the buying fear as well that I as an individual. No, like you're just about to press that button to buy, and you know, if you've got it slightly wrong, which I've got a tendency to do, that kind of thing. Yeah. Oh my god, that's 2 hours now trying to get hold of the company, trying to sort all this stuff out. And if I know that I go through a seamless experience the first time round, maybe that second purchase, you're a bit more gung ho. You think, you know what, I'll fill my basket with all these things. So I suppose there's the upsell direct there in that first order edit that comes at you, but maybe there's a less tangible profit that comes into the business by their second loyalty purchase that comes in, less fear around it. Yeah. So it's probably going to be hard to measure that, but I suppose it doesn't matter.
I make that mistake every time I place an order. I've got my old house, which I rent out, which I've got all of my bank associated with. I consistently order products to my old house and then realize, oh God, I don't live there anymore, and then have to raise a ticket or make a change and go through that process myself to get that product delivered to my new house.
Absolutely.
First hand advocate.
Absolutely. And short to mid, obviously, order editing, relatively new, coming out, you say, startup kind of mode. Short to mid term, plans, 6 to 12 months, what can we expect from you guys in the future? What are the plans?
I think what we're trying to do now is just get the product in front of retailers so that they understand the proposition. I think genuinely, I think every retailer in the UK, and sorry, globally, needs this product right now. So it's all just about awareness. It's a tremendously scalable business. It's not the kind of business that requires lots of support and a development team around it. It is a tremendously scalable business. So really what you can expect to see over the next 6-12 months are big brands coming onto the platform. Mm. Really good case studies, video testimony, obviously in the future as we start to get a bit more evolved in terms of our case studies and what have you. But I genuinely think you're just going to see a lot of people using and talking about order editing. You're probably going to see a lot of videos about Hamish talking about his love of Paramore and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're just going to see a stellar growth of the product. And, you know, and obviously new features coming out, potentially a bit more AI, perhaps a bit of integration with recommendation engines and that kind of thing. So,
and is this, I think you're right, I agree. Every brand, every retailer should be exposed to and see the benefits of this. Does that mean that there are plans, immediate plans, to be able to take this just from being a Shopify-based app to any e-commerce front-end based app?
I think there's only plans for it to be a Shopify app currently. Right. Again, I can't speak for Hamish, but it's very much a Shopify product.
Okay.
If any news on that front would definitely not originate from me. I've got no idea.
Nice one. And so yeah, I guess we're wrapping up unless you have anything else you want to ask about.
It's been a pleasure. I mean, obviously everyone knows that Dave and I have worked with each other for many, many years. So I think I'd just say the silver thread that I picked up from that conversation, which I can validate, is, I mean, Dave's a market builder and it's all around that, you know, working for him. The thing that got Dave really excited was if customer was benefiting or if a customer was in pain. And that's effectively the barometer I've seen for the years working with Dave, is making sure that the customer at the end of the day gets some value out of this. So it's no surprise to me to listen to this thread come loud and clear through the podcast. I suppose wanted to just validate the fact that that's what I see loud and clear in Dave, is a customer first guy, and the order editing piece therefore makes an absolute but yeah,
good to know that someone's noticed.
Thank you very much.
Just before we do jump off, I'd always like to do a little question at the end to ask everyone, what's your favourite retail brand at the minute? This is a little shout out.
My favourite retail brand.
Yeah.
Ooh, that is an interesting one. I think my favourite, let me think.
Ask this question again in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Mm. So I love Mountain Equipment, because I wear that consistently. A lot of my friends get a discount code for that. Mm. That is my favourite apparel brand. They're a really high quality outdoor clothing brand that haven't sold into the middle-aged chaps market. They focus on mountaineering equipment and obviously under-exercised middle-aged men like myself go out and buy their clothing and apparel. I'm also a big fan of really nice, wholesome, independent brands. So I'm doing a bit of work with Tatty Divine at the moment, who are a jewellery brand that I've worked with many years ago. And I'm giving them a hand with a few bits. I love them. It's generally people that are in my very near immediate.
Mm-hmm.
I love Lounge Underwear, just because they're cool. They're really nice people. Castor, high quality sportswear. Love that. Huel, I eat every day.
You do, yeah.
I've got my 1,000 meals award for Huel,
is that a big black box of
You get a shaker and a nice message. Yeah. I need to post that on Instagram to get that.
I'm surprised you're not the first person to get that, because I used to see coming through the bucket loads the delivery every day of Huel.
So, yeah. For someone like me who is, I buy food when I'm hungry, which is obviously dangerous. Having a store of Huel where you can have a relatively healthy meal without going and buying a burger is a very life lengthening service. So I value Huel actually as a life extender for me rather than just something to eat.
One thing that I've known about you, Dave, I don't know if many people do, maybe they do, but you've got quite a green thread running through you as well. You're quite an advocate of green, ethical, sustainable.
Yes.
Have you got one particular brand that you'd like to give a shout out? We've had quite a few on the podcast in more recent months that's in that kind of green, sustainable space. So your one shout out brand in that green space that you'd like to give a mention to?
Yes. If you're in Shopify e-commerce, you'll see the emergence of Supercycle, which is a really nice rental app. For Shopify, that's making a good surge at the moment. I really like a brand called Karma, run by Jim Holland, that are out planting trees. Really fun company. Kevin McCombie heads up their sales team, and he's a very entertaining person to go out with for a night out. And obviously Passenger, I wear a lot of Passenger clothing. I'm not wearing it today, but in the main, I'm generally wearing Passenger clothing. So yeah, those kinds of brands.
Yeah, and kind of top it off, if people want to get you on LinkedIn, find out more about order editing, where can they go?
I think LinkedIn. I'm obviously connected to a few companies across B2B, integration, order editing, Supercycle, rental. So yeah, I'm happy to help across a number of fronts.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
And finally, if you are a retail brand looking to integrate your solutions and streamline the flow of data across your tech stack, then get in touch with us at knottedcommerce.com.